as well.
You can turn it up a little bit, just a teeny bit. Yeah, that's fine.
Hey, test mic.
Rolling?
Let's do it, man.
Welcome to the sessions at Midori House. I'm Andrew Muller. Our guest this week is both Australia's greatest songwriter and, from an international perspective, its best kept secret. Paul Kelly has recorded more than 20 albums of apparently plain spoken but deceptively complex songs, many articulating the Australian experience with unusual acuity. He's also written one acclaimed memoir, How to Make Gravy. For his latest album, Seven Sonnets and a Song, Kelly has collaborated four centuries after the fact with one of his key non-Australian influences, William Shakespeare. Kelly came to Midori House to discuss writing music for the most famous lyricist of all.
Sonnet 73. That time of year thou mayest in me behold, when yellow leaves or none of you do hang upon those boughs which shake against the cold, bare ruin choirs where late the sweet birds sang. In me thou seest the twilight of such day, as after sunset fadeth in the west, which by and by black night doth take away. Death's second self that seals up all in red. In me thou seest the glowing of such fire that on the ashes of his youth doth lie, as a deathbed whereon it must expire, consumed with that which it was nourished by. This thou perceivest which makes thy love more strong, to love that well which thou must leave ere long.
Paul Kelly, welcome back to the Midori House Sessions.
Thank you.
A repeat guest. Obviously, you're here playing songs from your Shakespeare-inspired or Shakespeare collaboration.
Yes.
Really. You go back a fair way with him. You write about this in your memoir, How to Make Gravy, sort of going to a bookshop in South Yarra with one of your first royalty checks and buying an enormous collected works. Was it a thing since you were a kid, or was he something you came to later?
As a teenager, we did Macbeth at school, so that grabbed hold of me straight away. I think it's a good play for teenagers. Macbeth, pretty gothic, sex, death, betrayal, you know, witches, you know, moving forest. So it was all there. Also, in that when I was still at school, I saw another school do a production of Hamlet, which also rocked my head. So,
which is another great play for teenagers because it's a tale of gang warfare as well, aside from everything else.
Yes, and fathers and sons and wicked uncles and sons and mothers. Yeah, so. The plays I've always loved. I mean, he's just my favourite writer, full stop. I got to the sonnets probably late, you know, much later on, and just picked at them over the years, you know, reading, and there's 154 of them, and some of them are quite knotty and take a fair bit of digging into. But I just sort of kept coming back to them to read, and I wrote some music to Sonnet 18 about 2.5 years ago, you know, just for fun. I just got into the habit in recent years of putting poetry to music for fun, you know, other people's words. I hadn't really done it before. I don't know why I hadn't thought of it. For 30 years I've been writing songs, you know, trying to, you know, using my own words, but it was kind of a relief to suddenly realise you can go and use, you know, find these beautiful words and have a play around with them.
You say it's a relief, but when you decide that you're going to do it out loud and in public, as it were, is it daunting when you're kind of setting yourself up as a co-writer with William Shakespeare, no less? Do you get those moments of thinking, oh, come on, what am I doing?
Not really. I mean, no, it's really just, like I said, it's playing with them. And, you know, Shakespeare himself was the most playful of writers. So I just feel that, I mean, that's in the spirit. I think you're probably more nervous about putting music to a living poet. You know, there's a famous story of Robert Frost going to hear someone who put music to his poems, and he just hated it, had to walk out. And, you know, ever since then, the Frost Estate won't let people do his poems. But there's no such problems with Shakespeare.
Was he always an influence on you as a songwriter, though? I mean, aside from being obviously a fan of his work, and I think anybody who is any kind of fan of the English language at all has to be a fan of Shakespeare. It's like liking rock and roll and saying you don't like Chuck Berry, otherwise it would be an absurd position to take. But, I mean, there's one or two moments in your catalogue I can remember. I mean, Desdemona off Under the Sun is basically Othello, isn't it?
Yeah, that's Othello in three verses.
But have there been any other moments where you've thought of him as a particular influence?
He's always there, just in the language and use of language. And, you know, the more direct influences pop up from time to time. There's I've got a song called A Waste of Time, which is the first two lines of it are straight from Richard II. A waste of time, and now doth time waste me. I took out the doth in that case, but I'm back into the doths and thous and these now. I don't want to start changing the sonnets.
This is sonnets 44 and 45, which Shakespeare wrote to be read in sequence. So I'll sing them both together as one piece. If the dull substance of my flesh were thought, injurious distance should not stop my way, for then despite of space I would be brought from limits far remote where thou dost lay. No matter then, although my foot did stand upon the furthest earth removed from thee, for nimble thought can jump all sea and land as soon as think the place where he would be. But thought kills me that I am not thought, to leap large lengths of miles when thou art gone. But that so much of earth and water wrought, I must attend time's leisure with my moan. Receiving naught from elements so slow, but heavy tears, badges of either's woe. The other two slight air and purging fire are both with thee wherever I abide. First my thought, the other my desire. These present absent with swift motion slide. And when those quicker elements are gone, in tender embassy of love to thee, my life be made of four with two alone, sinks down to death oppressed with melancholy, until life's composition be recured by those swift messengers returned from thee, who even now come back again assured of thy fair health, recounting it to me. This told our joy, but then no longer glad. I send them back to thee, and straight grow sad.
He does have that thing at his best, and it's something I always, well, I like to think I can notice in things like books and records and films, that sense you get the person or people creating it were having a lot of fun, that they were really enjoying this. There's a real joy about it.
Yeah, I mean, there's joy in that. I mean, that Richard III is such a villain, but there's a great joy in the writing to that. And I know, you know, actors love to play Richard III. I mean, it's just... Again, he pushes the language to extremities, and I mean, he had to compete. You know, writing the plays, he had to really go out and grab the attention of the audience. You couldn't be too, in a way, too subtle or too let the audience come to you. I mean, how does it compete with bear baiting down the road and all the rest of the stuff that's going on? So that's what the plays do. They reach out and grab you by the throat.
In the process of, I guess, writing songs with him, you know, 400 years after the fact, did you find yourself thinking about him as a writer or as a man in a different way? Anything about his work that hadn't occurred to you previously? Do you notice things when you get that close to it?
I guess you can't help speculate. I mean, we know so little about him that you just can't help speculating what was, you know, what was he really like? And, you know, keep going back to the sonnets, as I said, over a few years, and then read commentaries. And some commentators really try to find out the autobiographical element of the sonnets, but that's hasn't been a great concern of mine. I think it doesn't matter, really, how true to his own life they were. It's really, it's the poem is the thing. There's great music in them. And I guess what I have discovered going into the sonnets was how much he repeats words. I mean, Sonnet 40's got the word love in it 10 times, and that's in a 14-line poem. but that kind of thing is all the way through, and I think really gives a great music to these poems. So I think my main discovery in the sonnets is the musicality of them, not really anything about what he was like. Though we would love to, you know, I'd love to go and have a few ales with him. It would have been fun. They say he was a pretty, you know, they say he was good company.
It would be incredibly surprising to discover otherwise, that incredible ear for how people talk and the quirks of language. What would you ask him over that ale?
What would I ask him? Oh, I don't know. You got me something. I probably wouldn't ask him, you know, I wouldn't ask him much about his writing. I'd probably ask him about other things, about, you know, where's a good place to go tonight? Something like that. I don't know. This is a song, not a sonnet. It's a song from Twelfth Night, sometimes called Clown's Song and sometimes known as Mistress Mine. Oh, Mistress Mine, where are you roaming? Staying here, your true love coming. Who can sing both high and low? Trip no further, pretty sweetie. Journey's ending, lovers meeting. Every wise man's son doth know. What is love? 'Tis not hereafter. Present mirth hath present laughter. What's to come is still unsure. In delay, there lies no plenty.
You've been listening to The Sessions at Midori House. Today's guest was Paul Kelly, and his new album, Seven Sonnets and a Song, is out now on Cooking Vinyl Records. For more details, go to paulkelly.com.au. Join us again at the same time next week for more live music. But for the moment, I've been Andrew Muller. Thanks very much for tuning in.
Oh, Mistress Mine, where are you roaming? Oh, Mistress Mine, where are you roaming? Mistress Mine, where are you